You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. One of the central proposals in Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan's State of the City address last month, a new busing system to serve both district and charter schools. That announcement brought to mind Detroit's fraught history with school busing. The city schools, along with nearly every urban school system in the nation, are still living with the busing legacy of the 1974 Supreme Court decision in the case of Milliken v. Bradley. Joyce Bau is Professor Emerita of Political Science and Public Administration at Central Michigan University. She wrote the book, The Detroit School Busing Case, Milliken v. Bradley, and the Controversy Over Desegregation. Professor Joyce Bau, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you very much for having me.
As somebody who has just really devoted so much of your life to looking at busing in Detroit schools, what were your thoughts when you first heard Mayor Duggan's plan for getting kids to school in Detroit?
I actually think it's a promising development given the situation that is presented at this point. I particularly like the part that involves child care and the after-school programs. We understand that working parents have lots of struggles with transportation, and this busing program involving the charters and the traditional schools could be very helpful in allowing more students to be involved in after-school activities, especially those kids who are most at risk. And I also think it's important in large part because despite all of the problems that we've seen with charter schools, they're not going away anytime soon. And at this point, I believe the figures for enrollment are traditional public schools have 51,000 students, and the charters have about 35,000. And if you remember in the last budget, either this year or last year, when they made some reforms to the Detroit public schools, one of the things the state legislature refused to do was to provide sufficient regulation of charter schools. So anything that I think can be done to improve the traditional public schools is really, really something we ought to pursue.
And when you talk about the situation as we find it now for the traditional public schools, takes us back to the fact that Detroit is certainly no stranger to this issue of school busing and how this situation came to be. The Supreme Court case, Milliken v. Bradley, it actually began in 1970, didn't it, when the NAACP sued the state of Michigan?
Yes. As you may recall, that case began in 70. It was a very modest integration proposal that the school board had proposed, and it eventually led to a charge that the entire system was illegally segregated. And the federal district court agreed with that.
That's right. That was Judge Roth.
Right. Stephen Roth.
Yes. And then the case wound its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. So tell us, Professor Bau, briefly about the arguments that were presented and the court's ruling.
Well, the argument was that housing segregation and school segregation were very much intertwined, that the housing exacerbated school segregation exacerbated housing segregation. People want to live where their kids can have good schools and so forth. And they pointed out that the housing segregation was not something by accident. It wasn't simply private choice. It was the policies and practices of the federal government, of local government, of the real estate and lending industry. The FHA played a big role. You had restrictive covenants. You had redlining. You had location of public housing projects in certain communities. You had school policies of gerrymandering attendance lines. You had open enrollment and school transfer policies, school construction policies, all of those kinds of things. And Judge Roth said that those things you had to take into account, both housing segregation and school segregation. And then when he got to the remedy phase, he basically said the only way we can have meaningful school desegregation is to involve the suburbs. Because by the time the case had worked its way to him, the Detroit public schools were about 70% African American. And his idea was, well, if you have Detroit-only desegregation, you're simply going to move black kids from one school to another. When the case ultimately reached the Supreme Court, the court decided in a 5-4 decision in 1974 that the suburban schools could not be included because the plaintiffs in the case had not shown that the suburban school officials had made specific policies to segregate their schools. And the Supreme Court refused to recognize that connection between housing policy and school policy. And the thing that was really interesting, too, is this argument that the Supreme Court made, Chief Justice Berger's opinion, was really pretty disingenuous, because the suburban school districts really didn't need any specific policies because of housing segregation in the suburbs. As I recall from 1970 census data, there were 2 million, almost 700,000 residents in the suburbs. Only 97,000 of them were African American. So there really weren't any black students to worry about segregating.
When you think of the role of the suburbs, we just need to stop for a moment and remember that Dearborn Mayor Orville Hubbard was quoted in the New York Times saying, "I favor segregation." And he told another newspaper, and this was his direct quote, "Every time we hear of a Negro moving in, we respond quicker than you do to a fire."
Oh, exactly. And he said he promised that in all of his years as mayor, Dearborn was going to remain lily white.
Well, and I think at the time there were some 90,000 residents in Dearborn, and there were fewer than 100 of them were African American.
Right.
How was that high court decision received?
Well, it was interesting. Most of the folks in the suburbs were pretty happy with it. There were a few people. I was reading Detroit Free Press, Detroit News articles, Michigan Chronicle articles. A few of the folks that they interviewed said that, you know, they thought this was a bad decision and they thought their children should be able to go to school together and learn what the American system really is supposed to be. But for the most part, suburban parents were very happy. I think one young man said his father said he would go to jail before he would send his kid to a school in Detroit. The plaintiffs, of course, in the case were very despondent. Some of the African-American folks in the Detroit area were, there was some mixed reaction. Probably the Michigan Chronicle produced an editorial that was quite critical of the Milliken decision. There were some parents who were worried that they would not be able to get out to the suburban schools if, you know, something were to happen with their children. Many of them were not that surprised that the Supreme Court made that decision that it did. Governor Milliken and President Ford were praised the decision as a good thing. Coleman Young said he didn't feel all that upset about Milliken, but he was very concerned that there wouldn't be sufficient attention to improving the schools that were really suffering at that point.
And so then what was the immediate impact of this case in Detroit with its schools?
Basically, what happens then, by the time the case had reached the Supreme Court, Judge Roth had died. I think he actually died about 3 weeks before the decision, something like that. And so the Supreme Court then sent the case back to the federal district court for them to create a new remedy, a Detroit-only remedy. The task fell to Judge DiMaggio, and basically he ordered two components of a remedy. One was a very limited busing plan in the city of Detroit, but it excluded about 80% of the city's black students. So it was very limited. And I think all of the city's central schools were excluded. And he also ordered a temporary compensation plan to provide some funding to try to build the schools up. But the problem was, at this point, you know, this is a temporary funding plan, and the funding was insufficient because the city and the school system were already in serious economic decline and disinvestment. And, you know, as you remember, after World War II, the auto industry and related industries, you know, really left the city and went to the suburbs and went to other areas in the country. And so when they left, middle-class whites and working-class whites who could afford it moved out to the suburbs, again with the help of redlining policies, the Federal Housing Administration. And so the tax base was depleted. And so you simply did not have the sufficient funding. And also, during the 1960s, 1970s, there were several school millage proposals, bond proposals that were defeated.
So here we are today. Let's talk about the long-term impact. How has this Milliken decision affected the school choice landscape that exists today in Detroit? Would we have charter schools without Milliken?
I really question whether there would have been a need for charter schools or voucher programs or schools of choice, because it seems to me that after we abandoned our efforts at desegregation, charter schools became one of the strategies, you know, to deal with the problem of unequal education. And it seems to me that I'm not saying that Milliken was the only reason that the city schools in Detroit and other metropolitan areas are in, you know, dire straits, but I doubt very seriously that the traditional public schools would have deteriorated so badly if white and black children were attending the same schools. And it seems to me that Justice Marshall, Thurgood Marshall, was right. With no opportunity to escape desegregation by further flight into the suburbs, then I'm wondering whether white parents would have, you know, tried to ensure higher quality in all of the schools. And also then perhaps state legislatures, our state legislature and other state legislatures, would have had more incentive to allocate resources in ways that serve the needs of all the schools in their systems, not just those in the suburbs.
So let's circle back to where we started, Professor Bauer. How did this Supreme Court decision from well over 40 years ago connect to what is happening today in Detroit, and particularly the mayor's effort to come up with a solution with this proposal to bus students?
Well, it just seems to me that it's difficult to actually bring about the kind of change. He's made a proposal. I think it's a sound proposal, but it's only going to affect, you know, a limited number of students. And it just seems to me that if you had a system where the schools in metropolitan Detroit were all connected in some way, you would not have the need for this kind of proposal to begin with.
Joyce Baugh, Professor Emerita of Political Science and Public Administration at Central Michigan University. Among her books, The Detroit School Busing Case, Milliken v. Bradley, and The Controversy Over Desegregation. Thank you so very much for talking with us on Stateside.
Thank you so very much for having me and for attacking this issue.